the eve of the Fed meeting and stock markets are not happy. If ever there was an understatement, welcome to Macro Money. This is Ilya Spivak, head of global macro here at Tasty Live. And we're gearing up for the May 1st monetary policy announcement coming at us in less than 24 hours here. And as we prepare, we get one last tidbit of annoyance for stock markets from today's macro calendar. We'll take a look at that and how that sets us up for the policy announcement. And then, of course, delve into what the possibilities are, what the various scenarios look like for stocks and other markets, and try to kind of get a sense for where things could be going next. So let's start off here with what came out today, because the string of annoying inflation data for stock markets continued in spades. We got the quarterly employment cost index on the calendar today, the first quarter number. And this was a very interesting set of figures because we, of course, monitor the monthly average hourly earnings pace, and that's sort of the monthly wage inflation thing baked into the jobs report. But that jobs report can be a little bit messy. It can be a little bit volatile for its various numbers, and it comes from two different surveys, so you can get some conflicting indications there. What you see here is generally a little bit of a better, kind of more rigorous benchmark for where overall employment costs are going. And what you see today is in the first quarter, you have a rise of 1.2% highlighted there on the chart. That's up from 0.9% in the prior quarter. It's higher than the 1% expected by the preponderance of economists. And it is the highest in a year, which of course, all in suggests that inflation in the area in which the Fed cares about it most is stickier than the baseline was anticipating. Now, you can see this from all the various indicators of inflation that we tend to look at. Of course, we just saw last week that baked into U.S. GDP numbers, we were looking at a much higher personal consumption expenditure component. That was a big reason why the markets kind of stumbled on that GDP number. Ultimately, the headline was weaker. The inflation component was higher, so the markets kind of seesawed and didn't really know what to do with it one way or another. This, of course, unmistakable, but the key measures of inflation that we tend to focus on, first, the monthly PCE that came out last Friday showed us in spades, disinflation is stalling. You can see that with the naked eye here. Here's core inflation coming down and now sort of flatlining. If we look at what happens with the headline, of course, we can see it's perking up a bit, and that's ostensibly because this energy component has become less negative as we've seen base effects fade away. But nevertheless, we are looking here at a progress that was unmistakable from the peaks here on the way down, in particular for the core. Note that the core, much less volatile than the headline. You saw, for example, here, energy was giving us a fairly steep decline in the headline. And then as it became less negative, there was a period of stasis here and then another leg down as food inflation came out of the equation. You can see here food narrowing in its positive contribution. But the core, which excludes food and energy has been steadily marching downward until basically the last several months. You see a very similar story for CPI, the other big measure of inflation. Here it's even more overt. Here's the headline number. You can see. And we are back. Apologies about that, folks. We had some technical difficulties here on this side, but we return to you now with more about what this Fed policy announcement is going to do. And where we left off here was looking at inflation numbers that we've seen register a little bit hotter than expected over the past several months, and seeing that we've seen some flattening of the progress that we've seen in the path to disinflation here. And just to backtrack a hair, here's the PCE numbers. We can see the flatlining of the core here, which had been marching steadily lower, even as the headline has been a little bit more volatile around the base effects from this energy component being first a deflationary influence and then less so as it rebased. Same thing here for the CPI set of numbers. Again, a little bit of a rebasing in energy, but we can see that the progress at the headline has been arrested. But more importantly, the core is now flatlining. And what we're seeing in both of these, in the PCE, most inflation lives in the core services area, and so too CPI confirms most inflation lives in this pocket of it. And where we were last, as we dropped off a little bit before coming back here, is this story. So this, of course, is where today's employment cost index data is so impactful. Note here, if you look at CPI, it has come down from 9% to 3.5%. Needless to say, impressive disinflation. The PCE version of the story, from 7.1 to 2.7%. Again, impressive disinflation. And of course, yes, you can see them getting a bit stuck here, but the progress made to this point has been emphatic. Where you don't see anything that's analogous is in the employment cost index, where you can see we've only come down from 5.1 to 4.2%, a decline of less than 1%. What's more, this data that we just saw today, we mentioned earlier that the quarter-on-quarter number was hotter than expected. Here it is again, 1.2% versus 0.9% in the last number for the fourth quarter, and 1% expected, so hotter all around. Moreover, this is the first time in 2 years that this thing has stopped declining. The last time that we'd seen an uptick in this measure, we'd have to go all the way back to where we went into this high at 5.1%, where we held for several quarters, in the second quarter of 2022. So in the first quarter of 2022, 4.5, second quarter, 5.1. We held at 5.1 until the first quarter of 2023, where we started to decline. So not for 2 years has this thing stalled like this on the path to disinflation. It has stalled now. And so, not surprisingly, the markets are looking at this and saying, wait a second, this is precisely the part of inflation that the Fed is worried about. This is what's holding service sector with a sticky inflation issue, and it's not going the right way. Surely, this is the issue the Fed needs to address. As we, of course, just saw in the PCE numbers, there is a meaningful component to this that's made of housing, but the service sector is the lion's share, and there's not really anything the Fed can do about the housing component, because arguably, it would need to cut rates. to unfreeze the housing market and bring both buyers and sellers back in. Sellers don't want to sell because the properties they are currently sitting on are financed at much lower rates than what's available in the market after the 2022 to 23 rate hike cycle. And so if they were to go and buy something new after selling wherever it is that they're sitting in currently, they would have to refinance it at much higher costs. No sellers, because of course that's not exactly a good motivation to be a seller, means that the prices for housing aren't falling as much as they could be in response to higher rates, which in turn drives out buyers. So the housing market is holding this inflation stuck there because, of course, there's not really turnover. That turnover would come if there were cuts, but you couldn't necessarily cut because of what's happening in the service sector side of things. If you were to cut with that issue still there, you would essentially bake those costs into the cake more permanently. Inflation expectations would anchor there, and then good luck getting to 2%, which is, of course, the Fed's target. So when we look at where the Fed actually has agency, it is in holding borrowing costs high enough that labor demand is squeezed relative to supply. We can see we still have a deficit of about 2.2 million workers as of the latest reckoning. And with that, a situation where inflation is struggling to come off. Now, of course, we can't necessarily define labor supply. So the way to work this down, ostensibly, is to slow the economy, to pressure the labor market, and to weaken demand. And that means higher rates. So not surprisingly, with that in mind, when we saw this employment cost index data hit the wires today, the response from stocks was displeased, to put it mildly. There's where the data hits. Needless to say, this is about as loud of an argument for the importance of macro outcomes as one could surmise. It hits right there, and there's the response. This is the S&P 500, the ES future. Same story in the NASDAQ. And if we were to look at the Dow, or if we were to look at the Russell, we'd see exactly the same thing. So clearly the markets are uneasy about this as we head into this Federal Reserve policy announcement coming at us tomorrow. Now, where the Fed is going to go with this has already been somewhat telegraphed. Fed policy officials were talking about it the week before last. They never say anything in the week right before a policy announcement, so everybody was mum last week. But the week before that, key policymakers, including Chair Powell, were starting to float the idea there that the three rate cuts they were still calling for when the last policy meeting convened in March probably don't look reasonable anymore. But over the weekend, and indeed today, some very telling headlines from one Nick Timiraos, who rightly or wrongly, the markets consider something of a Fed whisperer, a kind of outlet for the Fed's consensus view into the media, whether that's accurate or not, or whether Mr. Timiraos has any kind of actual inside access to Fed officials, who's to say? Certainly not me. But these headlines are very straightforward. Over the weekend, the article saying the neutral rate, that is the floor after any rate cuts round, is now higher than it's been before, so the market needs to acclimate to higher rates because inflation is not going to go away in a hurry, and rates are probably going to have to stay structurally higher to get that managed down to the Fed's target of 2%. And just today, even more overtly and even more so pointed at this week's policy announcement, the Fed set to signal a higher for longer bias. Now, if we look at the way that this has been reflected in stock markets, we can very clearly see that, and we've of course looked at this chart many times before here, we can very clearly see what that looks like since the start of this stocks rally. We can see right here, it begins to build as rate cuts start to get built out. By the time we get to the beginning of the year, the market has run away with expecting as many as 6 cuts. Then, of course, U.S. economic data begins to perform better relative to expectations, and the cuts begin to fizzle. But as long as the markets are on the dovish side of the Fed baseline forecast, here's where it was in December. That's what activated the move out of this congestion here higher. And here's where it still is in March. Notice when that thing got reinstated in March, when the Fed came back and said, no, we're still at 3 cuts, the result was very different from what it was here. Why? Well, when this started to build out, it was on November the 1st, as a matter of fact, that the Fed said, we're probably done hiking. The next move is going to be a cut. We think we've done enough. Without quantifying what that means. The market, of course, immediately starts to speculate how many cuts are probably on the way for the Fed to have said all of that. Future money being cheaper is an understandable tailwind for risk sentiment. So stocks begin to rise. After all, if you take a risky bet and then you lose money, it's much more palatable to take the risky bet if you can then borrow back the lost money and go again at lower borrowing costs. So stocks begin to feed on that tailwind for risk sentiment and rise. When the Fed says in late December, we think 3, and the market is already on the dovish side of that, needless to say, the market isn't there because it thinks that they're wrong. No, it thinks the Fed is wrong and is going to have to adjust to their view. So again, future money is cheaper than the baseline. After a pause, we go again. As this better than expected economic data winds this up, when we get into the March meeting and the Fed reiterates the 3 cuts that they're expecting, but the market has already moved to the hawkish side of that, stocks stop and fall. Because now this dynamic has been inverted. Now the market thinks future money is going to be more expensive than the Fed is saying. They're going to have to adjust to that view. And so cue tomorrow's policy meeting. How might this go? If the Fed comes out and says, we still think the path of least resistance is to cut, but there are fewer cuts that we're likely to do, that much seems to be already baked in. Markets are now calling for just 22 basis points in easing this year. That essentially says that we may not even get a single cut. Single cut would be 25 basis points, but of course, that's still a relatively commanding likelihood of 88% chance that a cut at some point this year is coming. So if the Fed says, we're going to cut, just not as much as we thought perhaps in March, that much is probably already in the market and is probably something of a relief for stocks. If, on the other hand, the Fed says, we may not need to cut at all, there is something to price out there, and stocks maybe take another leg lower on that as that 22 basis points gets closer to perhaps 12 or 11, which would make the likelihood of a single cut less than 50-50 chance of occurring. And of course, the most hawkish scenario would be if the Fed says, we may yet raise rates this year if inflation doesn't comply and introduce some real two-way risk into the equation. That's probably the most negative aspect for stocks, where that 22 maybe gets closer to zero. And in that sense, I mean, of course, not in a single day, but if that's the lead that the market starts to perceive, well, then stocks are probably in trouble indeed. It's the other way around for the US dollar. It's been inching up since essentially this rally in stocks began, and certainly since the beginning of the year. As rate cuts have diminished, the dollar's yield appeal has been bolstered. It has attempted to make a further push higher here. And If we get the sort of more hawkish scenario here, rate hikes back on the table, probably a very good thing for the US dollar. The possibility that the path of least resistance is still cuts probably does it no favors. And if all we do is open up the possibility of no cuts but no hikes, that leaves us somewhere down the middle. And that is how we're looking, and that is macro money for today. Thanks very much for joining. Apologies once again for some of the technical difficulties that we had here along the way. We'll get the video up for review in both parts in a bit here, so you can check out everything that we talked about. As ever, Macro Money is here Monday through Thursday after overtime, a show that I co-host with Dylan Radigan and Chris Vecchio, looking at the Wall Street close and where things might go thereafter. Back on with Chris for Futures Power Hour on Friday, on with Victor Jones tomorrow for The Price of Truth right after overtime and the shows following, talking about what the Fed did and what that might mean. And on with Victor and Tom for First Call Sundays as the markets open. I'm also writing for the news and insights portion of tastylive.com and opining sporadically on the platform formerly known as Twitter at Ilya Spivak. Thanks very much for joining. See you tomorrow.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducer.